decisions like finding your wife and the impact that has on your household is probably the most significant beginning. And to allow God to choose that for you assures you that maybe you'll be successful in this.
Hey guys, welcome to the Dads Building Teams podcast, where we chat about exactly that, dads building their family teams. Every week, me and my friend and mentor, Jeremy Pryor, alternate interviewing another father friend of ours about his particular journey as a father, pursuing the call to build a multi-generational team on mission. As always, let us know what you thought of today's episode on social media at Family Teams. And without further ado, enjoy today's episode.
Hey guys, welcome to the Family Teams Fatherhood Podcast. I'm really excited today to be talking to my dad, Jerry Pryor, and I had a bunch of questions I thought would be fun for us to go over as he has begun to think about family like a multi-generational team on mission. So I'm going to dive into that conversation in a minute, but first I wanted to share with you guys a fatherhood insight I call Wisdom is Living to Bless Your Grandchildren. How often do men in their 20s think about their future grandchildren? Maybe in some college dorm somewhere in the world you'll find a group of guys discussing in excited tones late into the night their dreams to bless their future grandchildren, but if such a conversation is happening, it's probably very rare and probably not in the West. And this is unfortunate because to aim your life at the flourishing of your family line at the earliest possible age is to be on the path to both changing the world and to living a great life. Great wisdom resides in choosing to live your life to bless your future grandchildren at a young age, to build skills that will help your future family for generations. Decisions like finding a wife that will bring fruitfulness and stability to your household, choosing a career that will allow you to spend time with your kids, making financial investments that pay dividends far beyond your short lifespan. Like Proverbs 13:22 says, a good man leaves an inheritance for his children's children. And being this proverbial good man is not simply about money. It's about all the tiny day-to-day decisions that are made differently when you're aiming at a goal far into the future. Now, you may be asking, why not instead say, wisdom is living to bless your own children? Why talk about the unique wisdom inherent in living to bless your grandchildren? Because living with only two generations in view, your generation and your child's generation, gives rise to subtle parenting decisions that often inadvertently result in building a terminal generation. I'm not training my kids to live a great individual life. I'm training my kids to be great parents. This perspective has given me the will to be more intentional and at times more strict with my kids, knowing that problematic relational or behavioral patterns are not just something that maybe I should just learn to put up with, but these patterns will be impacting my future grandchildren. And I have a limited number of years to coach my kids through these issues. Let me give you just one really practical example. You want to see what issues in microcosm your kids will be having in their parenting someday? Give them a pet and make them exclusively responsible for that pet's care. Now, I know that this is a nightmare for some parents because their child will drop the ball repeatedly and the parent thinks either the pet will suffer or the parent themselves will suffer, feeling responsible for picking up the slack. But what I can't stop thinking about in those moments is how my grandchildren will suffer if I don't help my child work through whatever selfish, neglectful, absent-minded, overbearing patterns are already emerging within their forming character. When's a better time to work on these issues than when they're under your training? But let's move from the hyper-practical to the deeply spiritual. David wrote, "The steadfast love of the Lord is from everlasting to everlasting on those who fear him, and his righteousness to their children's children." Can you accumulate spiritual blessings in your lifetime that you can pass on to your grandchildren even after you're gone? The Bible over and over again says yes. On Mount Sinai, God declared to Moses his glory by saying, "I am slow to anger and filled with unfailing love and faithfulness. I lavish unfailing love to 1,000 generations." What kind of spiritual blessings will your grandchildren get to inherit? As Solomon wrote, "Grandchildren are the crown of the aged, and this is a crown you play a part in designing." And remember that the amazing part is that there's no tension between doing this and blessing the rest of the world, because the more spiritually alive well-trained grandchildren come from your family line, the more the force of your life will pierce into the distant future as your family expands and multiplies through your descendants to bless the world that is yet to come. So this is definitely a topic that is big in our household and between the generations in our family line. And Dad, I'm curious, as you hear that, what are some of the things that that kind of brings to mind for you?
Yeah, there's a lot to chew on here. Decisions like finding your wife and the impact that has on your household is probably the most significant beginning. And to allow God to choose that for you assures you that maybe you'll be successful in this. If you just go out and grab the gal that you're most attracted to, not thinking about the future, but just how you feel at that moment, that may not prove to be a wise decision at all.
Yeah, and that doesn't seem like something that a lot of people think about. I mean, when they're at that stage, they're like, who do I like? Who am I attracted to? They're not necessarily saying, who's going to help me build a multi-generational family line?
Right.
And that's a different...
Well, in my case, God kind of broke into my world, in a sense, and let me know what his thinking was. It doesn't always happen this way. Sometimes you get a glimpse from his word or from other friends or from the Spirit. In my case, it was sort of this audible voice in my head as Jen and I were at this Bible conference, and we were just singing a song. And we've been dating for about 3.5 months, and suddenly I hear this voice, ask Janet to marry you. And so it really surprised me. Not that I hadn't thought about that, but I wasn't thinking about that at the moment. And so I didn't let the sun go down that day before I asked her to marry me, and she said yes.
That's awesome. So, you know, when you think about the fact that God, it reminds me of, you know, that verse in Psalm 127 where Solomon says, unless the Lord builds the house. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like because you were in a position to hear God's direction about your spouse, it was the Lord who built your house. And it seems like one of the things is there's a lot of tension, I think, we feel as men and eventually as husbands and fathers between the intentional things we have to do, we feel to try to set our families up well, and then God's action. And it seems like you know you guys built our family on this foundation of this was God's decision. Like
yes.
He is building the house, and we're submitting to Him. And that seemed like it played a big role. I mean, how did that kind of continue as our family kept developing from that point forward?
Sure. Well, it was confirmed over and over again that. That God made the right choice for me. Yeah. Of course he did.
He's good at that.
He's very good at that. And, you know, we're very different, which is good. And Janet compliments me extremely well. Where I'm weak, she's strong. Where she's weak, I'm strong. Mm-hmm. And our personalities sometimes clash. It's true. She's more of an A type. I'm more of a B type. But again, in the end, if you can work those conflicts out or those sort of rough edges out over time, it's a much better combination than just if we're both thinking the same way all the time.
Yeah, that's huge. And you guys are coming up to a very big milestone in your married life, yeah?
Yeah, it's hard to believe. I mean, could we really have been together 5 decades?
It's amazing.
So 50 years, it seems like it comes very fast. Mm. I can remember our 25th really well. And here we are 25 years later after that. So there's a saying that says as you get older, time goes faster. It's not true. Mm-hmm. There's still 24 hours in every day, but it does seem like the years go much quicker the older you get.
Mm, yeah. So when you think back, I mean, this is, you know, all the way back to that beginning and then these 50 years that we're getting really close to, which is, I think, it's about 3 or 4 months away.
July.
Yeah, in July, and mm-hmm. we're having this conversation in March. Yeah, anything that kind of, what helped you and Mom stay faithful to that covenant for that long?
Mm. Well, you've said the right word, covenant, because we did look at it that way, and that's what we believe marriage is, a biblical covenant that is witnessed between ourselves and God and family and friends. And so it's a contract that we vowed to follow and to be good to. And we take these vows very seriously, and we said, till death do us part. And I'm thankful that we've been faithful to each other. And there's challenges in that area, certainly. Like any man, any woman, those temptations come. But with God's help, we've stayed true. And so to look back on a covenant that's been kept up to this point is very satisfying. It's like, thank you, God, that you've been faithful and you've helped us be faithful to that covenant.
Yeah. Well, I'm just so grateful. You know, when I think about this conversation around multi-generational family line, I know that this is such a hard conversation for a lot of people listening to this because there's divorce in their background, and it feels so hard on any attempt at building multi-generational family when you've suffered through, and you and Mom have, I mean, you've lived through kind of the transition from a time when people were a lot more likely to stay together and watched as sort of this divorce epidemic exploded, and then all of your work in the church counseling different couples mm-hmm. through the process of considering divorce and breaking up the family line. And I don't know, what do you think happened to our culture or maybe inside the Christian world mm-hmm. that you watched over these years? And I don't know, you know, how you would talk to, you know, guys who might listen to this that are having a tough go of it, you know, in their marriage.
Yeah, I remember way back, this is in the 60s, where I listened to a message from Howard Hendricks and a prof from Dallas Seminary, who's now with the Lord. But he said, in a study they recently had done, if two committed Christians get married, the chance of divorce is 1 out of 460 versus the non-Christian marriages, which was about 1 out of 2. Now, that number has decreased significantly for Christian couples.
Yeah.
I don't even know what it is now. Some say it's almost the same as non-Christians. But there was that, as you say, there was that commitment that, hey, we're going to stick it out no matter what. In our culture, not even just in Christian marriages, but all marriages. But through the 60s and the you know, the sexual revolution and so forth, that changed dramatically.
Yeah, yeah. So some major cultural shifts just kind of hit, and people are kind of still reeling. It feels like our culture doesn't even know mm-hmm. what to do with some of the ideas that kind of naturally arose from some of these things. And I think that one of the casualties that we haven't really grieved is the impact on multi-generational family lines. Mm-hmm. I think that a lot of times we grieve, you know, and can see the devastation on the couple, you know, especially if there's one of the two that really didn't want the divorce. Then you see the devastation on the children.
Yes.
And we kind of think it stops there, right? It's like, well, that's hard. Mm-hmm. It's hard on them. It's hard on their kids. But you know, the Bible talks about how these things trickle down to the third and fourth generation.
Yes.
And you know, that's not something I think that we've taken on board fully. And so I know one thing that I think it's important to consider for guys who are listening to this too, that it whatever level you can be faithful to that covenant, it's not just implicating you or your children, but there's multiple lines generationally that you're impacting.
Yes, that's right. And through the hundreds of couples that I've done pre-marriage counseling with, one of the things I describe is marriage is like a triangle, where it's inverted triangle, upside down, where you have God at the bottom and the husband and the wife on the two corners up above. And as you get closer to God, you're actually going to get closer to each other. Hmm. And if there's anything that I would say to couples today to preserve the covenant that you've made, is getting closer to God together is the most important thing.
Yeah.
And I also say to couples, hey, the most important person you'll ever have in your life in terms of discipleship is your spouse.
Yeah. 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 And this conversation about kids and grandchildren, it's completely founded on that relationship. And it seems like you and Mom had a really strong understanding of that. Like that, you know, I know there's conversation. I feel like it's really healthy in the church that says, you know, if you're struggling with your marriage, sometimes the desire is to put the kids first, right? To mm-hmm. say, well, we're not getting along, but let's just sort of do this project together. What do you think about that approach? And yeah, what would you say to a father who's like, well, I'm just trying to focus on my kids. I don't know if this marriage is, you know, something I should really think about. It's too tough or something.
I would say one of the most important gifts you can give your kids is loving their mother. Mm. And there's nothing more important than that relationship. Kids get security and a feeling of well-being from a father and a mother who are in sync, who are together. and who demonstrate their love for each other, even in front of their kids. And so that brings a sense of stability to the home, gives peace in the hearts of the kids. And so it's parenting comes out of that relationship. It's that relationship is first, that's the foundation, and you parent from that foundation.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that idea that you can kind of be solo parents apart, you know, from that real unified front is not, that just doesn't work well, right? It's hard on kids. It's hard on their development, their character, their ability to relate to their spouse someday in the future. And so if you're trying to bless the generations that are coming, yeah, that's a great word, like love your wife.
Yes.
That's one of the most practical things you can possibly do. So I was excited to walk through some of the big milestones in our family's history and some of the hard decisions I feel like you and Mom made that had really set up things well for my family, you know, for our family going forward, for your grandchildren. I know that one of the big milestones that I grew up hearing about was how you had this passion from a pretty young age to go into the military, and you pursued that for many years. You achieved your goal, and then there was, after a couple of years of active service, a call for you to go to Korea without your family for 2 years, something like that.
Twelve months.
And yeah, that Mom wasn't too excited about that.
That's pretty a mile.
So you guys had to work through that. But yeah, I'd love for you just to, what was that like? Like having that dream, you know, I know that was a huge, you grew up with this real calling to minister to soldiers, you know, living around all the stories and the veterans that came back from World War II, and the interest you had and the calling you had there, and then how that sort of collided with your commitment to our family. Yeah. How was that for you at a young age?
Well, it began with just listening to my dad. As you mentioned, World War II vets, he was one. He served, I think, about 4 years after the war. He actually went in before the war and all the way through the war. So he got in 40 and came out in 46, early 46. And so he served with General Patton and was right in the thick of it there in Europe. And so I listened to my dad's stories, and it really piqued my interest in military. We watched war movies together and stuff. And so, in fact, in seventh grade, one of the things they had us do was, what do you want to be when you grow up? So we wrote a paper. I said, I want to be in the Army, and it's an infantryman, you know. Wanted to be in the foxholes and all that kind of stuff. Sounded you know, very exciting, adventurous. Well, that continued, just that interest was there. And so as I began to feel God's direction toward some kind of ministry, had to prepare for that. And so I was in Bible college in my first year, wondering what God had for me. And I was thinking maybe to stay in there for a year and then I'd get out. That was sort of a one-year program. Well, God had other ideas. And so during that first year, after a chapel, I went forward just as a call to serve God. I'll do whatever you want me to do. And so he took me up on that promise, on that commitment. And what started with 1 year ended up being 5 years. And that's where I met Janet. And in my second year, her first year. And so then we continued and graduated in, was it 1970? And so the military interest was there. Well, that would mean another 3 years because you have to be a seminary grad to go into the military as a chaplain.
And how did you went from wanting to be an infantry to be a chaplain? That's a big jump.
Well, things kind of all blended together.
Yeah.
The idea of serving God and country. Oh, man, that sounds cool. And then the idea of being an infantryman, yeah, I still want to do that. Janet was saying, why don't you go in the Air Force? You know, that's kind of easier. I said, no, I want to be out there where the soldiers are.
Yeah,
but you can just, you know, be a like a pastor in the Air Force. No, I want to be an infantryman. So anyway, even that, God took me up on that. And my first assignment was with the 101st Airborne Division at Fort Campbell, Kentucky, and which was out in the foxholes and the firing ranges and out in the field with the guys, which is the richest part of the ministry in the chaplaincy. Is going where the soldiers are and sharing the gospel, just sharing their experiences. And out of natural environment, they just begin to open up. And so that's that. That was an incredibly fruitful time of ministry.
Yeah.
For 3 years there at Fort Campbell.
Yeah. And so take me back to when you first got this sort of assignment to move to Korea, and yeah. how you processed that.
Yeah. Well, it's inevitable for all chaplains. You're going to take a year of separated from your family. And so I knew that would be my next assignment. And so about 6 months before that assignment would have sent me to Korea, I began to think through, now, we're in peacetime. This is after the Vietnam War. And I'd watched soldiers and their families struggling significantly when there is this separation of the father's gone and the mother's at home with the kids. Yeah. And struggling with, you know, how do I be a mother and a father? And so in watching that and actually dealing specifically with those families, I began to think, you know, I have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old. I know my wife and the struggles she has even in mothering, let alone not having me around. I mean, she's a great mother. But, you know, it's a challenge. And so I could not reconcile the fact that at peacetime, being 12 months away from my family and leaving all the responsibility with Janet, I thought, this just isn't, I don't think this is God's will for us. So we prayed about it for several months, and the Lord made it clear, yes, you need, I'll take care of you. There'll be other things, other doors I'll open for you, but yes, you need to get out. So I made a call one day and said, well, I'm, because you make a commitment at the 3-year point of indefinite. So I called before that 3-year point and said, we decided to get out of the military. And so I said, what do I need to do? He says, you've already done it. One phone call is all you needed to do. So that was that. I thought that was the end of the military and the chaplaincy at that point.
How did you feel at that point?
Mixed feelings, following God's will, but wondering what's the future. Because I thought, yeah. I'm the type of person, when I start something, I'm going to finish it.
Yeah, definitely.
So I thought, hey, this is a career. I'm going to go, you know, as far as they'll let me stay, as long as they'll let me stay. So it was a mixed bag.
Yeah, man.
Hey guys, did you know we have another podcast called 5-Minute Fatherhood? In it, Jeremy and I take 5 minutes every day to bring you a quick tip or piece of wisdom that will help equip and encourage you on your journey as a father living in God's design as the coach of your family team. Find it or listen and subscribe by searching 5-Minute Fatherhood on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, or anywhere else podcasts are at.
Well, again, thank you for that decision. I mean, that's
you're the,
huge.
You were the 2-year-old.
Yeah, I was. And I'm sure God knows where I'd be today if I had a year without my dad.
Yeah.
That's tough. I mean, so you saw this, and this is kind of like, and then, you know, as the story went on, you ended up being in the National Guard for like almost 30 years.
Right.
That's one weekend a month instead of, you know, away full time. But you saw, you've seen a lot of soldiers go on long tours of duty during yes. the Iraq War, while mm-hmm. you were at Fort Campbell, and with these guys going to Korea for the 101st. So, you know, it baffles me at some level. I mean, to your point, in peacetime, that our military, but it's like, I don't know if there's a better idea. Is there just, this is just so hard on families. You've seen so many of these marriages try to recover a year, 2 years, 3 years of being without their spouse. Man.
Well, there were 40,000 soldiers on the DMZ there in Korea. And where the soldiers are, there are chaplains. For every battalion, usually they try to put a chaplain, which a battalion's about 700 men. So you can add that up. That's quite a few chaplains
yeah.
that had to serve with the men right there.
Man, yeah, wow. Huge sacrifice. We sometimes think about the sacrifice that people make for our country. We think about, you know, the casualties in terms of deaths or injuries. Mm. We don't think necessarily about family casualties.
That's right.
But you saw some of that.
Sure did. In fact, you mentioned the Iraq War. So 29 years in the Army National Guard, the Lord just kind of gave that back to me. It's
yeah.
like, oh, you gave it to me. Now I'm going to give it back to you in a different form. And so during my last 9 years there at in the Washington Army National Guard, I was a state chaplain, and I was responsible for all the chaplains and chaplain assistants in our state. And so we deployed a brigade to Iraq to do guard duty in Baghdad, right there in the thick of things. And so we sent six chaplains and six chaplain assistants over there with them. And when they came back after the 12 months, we held marriage retreats, about 35 couples for each retreat, to try to help them reintegrate as husbands and wives and as families. And we saw couples tear up divorce papers because they had just had it after 12 months apart. And so it was a great way to assist them to figure out how to come back together again after being separated for 12 months.
Try to save those marriages.
That's right.
And yeah, that's huge. That was I remember that time you guys were going off on those retreats a lot, trying to help those couples come back together. So from there, and we're kind of just skipping through some of the big family milestones. Mm-hmm. I'd love to talk about, you know, kind of the other end of the spectrum, because a lot has happened, you know, in our relationship and our family and our decisions about building generational family, especially in the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. And so you were, there was a season where you were working full time at a church in Seattle at Overlake. I was here in the Cincinnati area, and I was beginning to really go deeper and deeper into an understanding of what is God's, you know, blueprint for the family in terms of generations. And in the meantime, you were teaching a class on Abraham to your, like, tell us a little bit about that class and like how that impacted your view of family.
Sure. Well, Abraham, for sure, he was a big part of it. It was actually the entire book of Genesis. And so Abraham's commitment to follow God no matter what, which meant leaving, in his case, his father's house and traveling to an unknown territory. And that really helped me in our transition to Seattle. We didn't know anybody there. And so when God called us to move there, it's like, okay, God, here we go. You know what's out there, and you know what you're going to do once we're there. And so that his example really encouraged me tremendously. Well, over time, I served a church where I taught a class of 50-plus, which was about 75 people average every Sunday. And in teaching that class and going through Genesis and other things, these couples were getting older just as we were getting older. Some were retiring and some were transitioning, major transitions in their life. And many were thinking, well, let's see, we're living in Seattle. Let's go to Arizona and get a house, you know, and on the golf course and just have fun and spend our retirement there. And so I heard those stories and I said, well, that sounds inviting, doesn't it? Yeah. But have you really prayed about that? Is this really God's call for you at this stage in your life? And so I challenged them. This is a time of life where your time, your resources, and you've got, many had grandchildren, and what about them? And many of those couples had not even factored that in. It's like, this is our life, this is our time, and we're going to do our own thing. Mm-hmm. And so some began to pray about, well, guess one option might be living near some of our grandkids, which meant maybe a distant move because they weren't there in Seattle. And so that became quite a discussion in our class over many months.
Man, what do you think is going on? So that's such a narrative that is so... That's such an important conversation. Very few people are having that conversation. Mm-hmm. There's you put your whole life into thinking about someday the kids are going to grow up, they're going to move away, we're going to retire, we're going to have fun, we're going to enjoy our golden years. And there's such mystique, you know, such a real sort of crystal clear, high resolution picture for a lot of people about what that looks like, even like where in the country they're going to move, mm-hmm. what their day-to-day life is going to look like. And then all of a sudden to be confronted with a conversation about, hey, what about your grandkids? You know, which it's just, these are such different narratives. And like in that conversation with people, what do you think people are wrestling with? What are people that are getting to that stage in life with that really, you know, that anticipating retirement and then having a conversation about, what about your family? What about blessing your grandkids? What do you think they're wrestling with there? What's that like for them?
I think a lot of couples in our generation were thinking two generations, and that was it. Their generation and their kids. And so to even have that conversation was unusual. It just wasn't that kind of thinking. And also very individualistic in terms of what you do with your kids. You You want each of them to fulfill, you know, their dreams, and it's very targeted at each kid, and to have an idea of family beyond the nest they're leaving wasn't a conversation many were having at all.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's tough. And it's interesting to watch. There are people who had that two-generational perspective, and then they begin to have a desire for that third generation. Mm-hmm. And I think oftentimes that's just a triggering for a desire for my legacy is my family line. It's mm-hmm. not simply what I invested during the 18 years. Maybe a child was under my roof. And you had that epiphany. I think it feels like at a really deep level. Talk to me about that. How did that happen for you?
Yeah, that's for sure. well, like we often say, you better practice what you preach. So here we were in the very circumstance that I've been teaching these couples. And so I was 59, and I one day said to Janet, God has blessed us with 9 grandkids. Can you believe that? Out of our 3 kids, we now have 9 grandchildren. And many were, like about half the grandkids were in Kentucky and half were with us in Seattle. And so you're the half that was in Kentucky, of course. And so we began to think through, well, let's think actually 4 generations. By that time, my dad had passed away. And my responsibility is to take care of my mother. I'm an only child, so it fell to me to make sure she was cared for. So we have my mother to care for. How about these grandkids, many of whom were not near? And if we move, probably some of our grandkids will move with us, which would make then a majority of our grandkids will be in Kentucky if we move there. And so we prayed about that in a deep level. And we, just similar when we left the Army, things were very fruitful where we were. You know, we're teaching this class. We're some of our grandkids are here, so having a good time with them. Lots of friends we've developed over almost 30 years living here. And so that was a huge decision. And similar to the one we made to go to Seattle, again, Abraham becomes the example. I mean, here's a multi-generational man who's thinking about, for instance, Isaac's wife. That's, you know, who does that?
Yeah.
Make sure we get the right wife for my son. And so I think the Hebrew culture thought generationally. That was sort of the way they were wired. That's the way God taught them. But in America, that's just not the way we normally think. And so I began to think about that at a very deep level, and we made the decision. Let's go.
Yeah, man. And then you had, I remember the story had something to do with, you had at the actual class, you decided to make that announcement.
I did.
Yeah, how did that, tell us what how did that work? What happened there?
Well, obviously, you have attachments. It was a mega church. So when you're teaching a class like that, you almost become a pastor to that small congregation. And so it's hard, you know, with deep friendships. But when I'd already explained through teaching why this was something to consider and to pray about. So it was the natural thing for us to then, okay, how about us? And so you kind of use yourself as an example. Well, I'm going to do the very thing I've been preaching about, teaching about. That really hit some of the couples significantly. I can still remember one, the Russells. They took it seriously, and they had done the very thing that we'd done.
Wow.
They've moved to be with their kids, and it was because of that deep conversation we had in our class.
Wow. And then it's all easy from there, right, Dad? You move to be with your kids, and then it's just like a
piece of cake.
Dream come true. Because there's always that's a serious decision on both sides. It's a mm-hmm. serious decision to not give in to maybe that narrative and all of its ease that our culture presents, but it's also embracing a challenge, which is like, you know, wow, we're gonna be in the thick of what's going on with our family. And
right.
like you said, with your mom, my grandma, with all of us and all the grandkids. And that was how long ago? When you guys
12 years
here?
Ago.
12 years now.
Yeah.
Man.
Reminds me a little of when the disciples, after Jesus had healed many and he was praying and getting direction from his father what to do next. And the disciples come to him and says, we couldn't find you. Where have you been? Oh, okay. I guess you're praying or something. What they must have observed
yeah.
is that people are asking for you. Let's go. And he said, no, we're moving on. Hmm. We're done here. We're moving on to the next town where people need us. And so it's not about the fruit that you're seeing at the place you're at. It's what does God want you to do next? Because there could be somewhere else where you can develop maybe even a different kind of fruit.
Yeah. It feels very in line with the story of your life of submitting to the direction that the Lord's giving you at every sort of major season or turning point. I know that you've said that you feel like God kind of directs you in decades.
Yeah, that's just kind of interesting.
Yeah.
It has kind of worked out that way. And I wouldn't say that's, you know, blueprint to follow necessarily, but it has happened to be our experience.
Yeah. Man. So we're still kind of working through the 60s in your guys' life. So you're 59. So now this next decade is moving here to Kentucky, being with a larger group of the family, being more integrated. And for us, it meant that you pretty much immediately came to work in my company for a season. And that was a very fun season. We got to hang out a lot. And
yes.
You know, what was really, well, maybe you can tell it too. Like, it wasn't just you. So my dad worked for me, my father-in-law, my sister-in-law for a season, my brother-in-law, my kids were working downstairs. April, my wife, was part of it. What's that? Brian. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. My nephew, who was getting a little bit older. Yeah. So you kind of came in to be a part of this, sort of family business that we were trying to launch as our first kind of asset that our family was gonna own. And yeah, what was that like for you? Any memories or thoughts about what it was like to work go from a whole lifetime in the church, really, right, in some ways, and you had in the chaplaincy, now all of a sudden, bam, you're in the middle of a business.
Yeah, sort of like going from the frying pan to the fire or something.
Yeah,
it was pretty wild. We sold our house in Seattle, and I went on ahead. We had looked at homes here in Northern Kentucky, but hadn't really landed one. So I came to find a house for us without my wife, as she was closing things there in Seattle. And so I came here on a Tuesday. I remember that same day I met with you and the buyer at the time at Tolkentown, mm-hmm. AWE later. And so I was trying to learn real quick how to buy things for your business and buy a house at the same time. So I said to the real estate agent, this was Tuesday, I said, I need to settle on a house Wednesday. We need to close on Friday because our stuff's coming on the next Monday. He said, well, that can't be done. I says, if you want to sell this house to me, you make it happen. He said, okay, I'll try. So sure enough, I decided on a house on Wednesday. We closed on Friday and moved in on Monday.
Man, yeah. It was amazing to watch God roll out the red carpet for you guys as you made the transition. You know, one of my favorite memories from the time we got to work together was getting to go to New York with you every year. Mm. So my dad was the buyer for our company. He bought all of our merchandise. And so we would go to Manhattan for Toy Fair. And I remember, I think it was around Valentine's Day every year. I think it was maybe it was on a Valentine's Day that we went to a Broadway musical together. Oh, man.
That was great.
Yeah, we got to spend like a week every year getting to run around New York and meet with all kinds of different vendors and make deals. And yeah, it was a fun season.
Hey guys, did you know that me and Jeremy created a special fatherhood masterclass we do online called The Skill of Fatherhood? If you want to immediately level up your father's skills and learn an entire system with tips and tricks and philosophy and help that we believe can fundamentally change your family's life forever, then this masterclass is for you. There's an entire module on the skill of training your kids with about 8 teaching videos in that one. There's an entire module you get on the skill of coaching your family as a team on mission with 8 or more videos in that one, including multiple interviews with a bunch of families doing this and how they do that. And an entire module on the skill of building multi-generational legacy and vision for your family with about 7 or 8 videos on that. The masterclass also comes with a workbook that walks you through the process so you never feel overwhelmed, but feel equipped and encouraged and ready to start leading your family in a bigger and better direction starting today. And we wanted to hook you guys up. So our podcast listeners, if that's you and you're listening, we want to give you an exclusive deal that we aren't doing anywhere else online. So if you want to get $20 off the masterclass right now today, then head head to familyteams.com and use the code DADS. That's DADS at familyteams.com. Again, that's the code DADS to get $20 off at familyteams.com.
The latest transition that's been, we've been going through, and we're kind of being guinea pigs in some ways, because this is like not something that we see a lot of people do, but you guys had you had a great house. Mm-hmm. You know, you were in a really comfortable situation. You weren't in Florida or Arizona, you were in Kentucky,
right.
But you were in your own house.
Yeah.
And you made the decision to move into our home, even though you could afford to stay in your own place indefinitely. So yeah, I'm curious, how do you, like, talk me through what was that decision-making process like for you?
Sure. Yeah, I should also say that, I guess maybe 5 years ago now, the rest of our grandkids moved here, and there's been more since. So we're now at number 13, and all of us are within, I guess, 10 minutes of each other. Yeah, so we had this, I would call it a grandparents' house. I mean, it was only the two of us. And so we had this like 5,000 square foot house with this enormous basement and all the fun things for grandkids. And so we just loved having grandkids over, sleepovers, hosting parties and holidays and all those things. It was a great season for 12 years. But as we were reaching, I reached my 70th last year. I'm 71 now. Janet just turned 70. We saw that tremendous upkeep of a house like that. And as great as it was, we thought, you know, I've seen other family members, my extended family, what I would say wait too long to make a transition into something more manageable, whether it's, you know, a condo or some smaller house or apartment. And so we said, we need to take the initiative and do it before we get too old. And so as we talked about the different options, one of the options we discussed was maybe moving on Jeremy and April's land. Maybe we could build a house there. And so as we talked that through, at the same time we were talking about that, you were building a big addition on your house, which included an apartment. And so we said, well, let's sell our house. And if we sell it before there are, we're calling it a carriage house, which is on top of a garage. If that's not ready yet, we'll move into the small apartment that you and April have built. And so we did that 3 months ago.
Yeah, from 5,000 square feet to like 700 square feet.
Yeah.
How's the
tiny house?
I was up there yesterday, and Mom said she couldn't find you. You were in the one other place you could possibly be in the whole apartment and not be seen.
Right. Yeah, we run into each other a few times.
gotta be careful.
I'll talk about maybe our 50 years as far as where we're at now in our marriage.
Yeah,
because it's sweet. And so we, so we're in this area that is just above your gathering room, which is a great room for lots of activities, and we're enjoying it very much.
Yeah, man, it's really been great. I've really enjoyed it. It's I'm so glad you guys, I think you took a risk, you know. I think I'm sure that a lot of people would say, ooh, that's not a good idea, like and I think our family, we're trying to lean into a different idea of family.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
It's not just you guys living with us. It's also integrating you into lots of different parts of our lives. And I think we've been kind of slowly figuring that out over the last 3 months. It'd be fun, maybe, I thought, to kind of look at a week in the life of what we're trying to do together.
Yeah.
So our week begins on Saturday night, because our Shabbat is on Friday night. And that starts with game night with Papa.
That's right.
So yeah, talk about it. So what do you do on Saturday nights?
Sure. Well, last Saturday we played Catan together, you know, all the kids, and so we try to do maybe a couple hours of games, a variety of games, and it's just a blast. It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You grew up as an only child. You always talked about how you were you'd pull out the board games.
That's right.
And play Risk against yourself.
That's right.
Monopoly. Wasn't as fun. Now at this stage, yeah, in your life, you got all these grandkids,
yeah,
who are just for 2 hours every week.
They're feeding into one of my loves.
Yeah. you got all the snacks out, and yeah, it seems like a really fun way for you to hang out with them, and then they're with you, and then Monday nights we get to lead a father's midrash. And that just sort of started this last month. Mm-hmm. We've done four or five of those, and that's been a lot of fun.
Yes, it has. Yeah, I'm the old guy, but it's kind of fun to listen to these young guys and to hear their thoughts about the scriptures and about life and be able to interact with them.
Yeah, this has been really fun. And Jackson's there. So yeah. So what we told our friends is, hey, there's kind of three generations of us who are living in the house that are hosting the Midrash. And so a Midrash is kind of a time where you read a couple of chapters of the Bible, try to discuss what they mean, and then how they apply, in this case, to fatherhood. That's kind of the conversation we like to have at a father's Midrash. And so we're going through the Proverbs, and it's fun, I think, for us to be able to be there and be a part of that conversation. And then you guys are helping us throughout the week, lots of driving help with the kids.
Happy to do some of that, take some of the load off, particularly April.
Yeah,
that's great.
And it's been really helpful. And then on Friday night, it's kind of like the culmination of our week, where we have our big family Shabbat dinner.
Right.
So, you guys have been part of that for many years now, but that's you and then April's mom, my Aunt Judy, mm-hmm. who's my mom's older sister, my sister Carrie, and her son Clayton, and then we have different guests. But as you guys have gotten to be a part of that rhythm, what's that been like for you and mom?
Yeah, it's great. We looked forward to it very much. And so it's just a time to, stop for, whatever we've been doing during the week. Our weeks probably are not as packed as yours, but at least it gives us a chance to catch our breath and to rest and to be able to just pause and reflect and just enjoy each other.
Yeah. Oh man, it's been so good. And a lot of the storytelling that we get to do, like hear from you and mom, and has been super valuable. And then have the grandkids right there who are getting to experience you guys every week. So I know a lot of people, when they hear these conversations, especially generations going upstream to parents, that can be really risky, can mm-hmm. feel really hard for people. I know that, you've been a part of those conversations as different dads have asked questions with, about what's that like. So yeah, any thoughts about what you would say to a dad maybe who's thinking about reaching out to his dad, his mom, and thinking about integrating parts of their life? I know that can be a scary conversation and process for a lot of families.
Sure. There are a lot of factors that go into that. And you've mentioned several times the word risk. Walking by faith is a risk. Not from God's point of view, but from our point of view, stepping out, especially into the unknown, feels risky. It feels that it's the unknown. It's like, I'm not sure what's going to happen. Well, that's what faith is. You're stepping out into the unknown. And so I think maybe a one-on-one conversation may help versus my wife and I getting together with her parents or my parents. Maybe I could talk to my dad. Maybe she could talk to her dad or mom, either way, mm-hmm. and begin to have those conversations just to sort of salt them. It's like, that's we're good. Just sprinkling a little bit out here. We're just taking little steps. And one of the ways I think you can, if they haven't already done this, is just have a meal together. Just maybe once a month or something. Let's just get together. And we did that with my parents. I'm sure you remember that.
Yeah.
And we enjoyed those Sunday meals at grandma's. And so that would be a way just that's sort of non-threatening to begin seeing what that relationship feels like.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Doing something that's a little more frequent than like Christmas and Easter or something. Mm-hmm. But maybe not diving straight into the deep end with like weekly meals and seeing how this develops. Maybe like sprinkling in, like asking them some questions. A lot of times I encourage dads to ask their parents just at the dinner table, like have a time where you just ask them questions about the family,
yes.
about the family story, about the past, or even the current events that are going on, and just sort of begin to sort of prime the pump of them sharing wisdom. And the more they sort of get used to that that role, which really that's what this season of life is about, right? It's like this yes. is the time where you get to pass on the generational wisdom.
That's right.
You're the bridge between, five generations at least, usually. You remember your grandparents and parents, maybe your great-grandparents, and you get to feed into your kids, your grandkids, and sometimes your great-grandkids. So five to seven generations are being bridged by the grandparents
at
each one of those dinners.
And yeah, my mother, I think, was part of a few Shabbats.
Yeah. Yeah, that was epic just to have my grandma there in her mid-90s getting to share. And I think all of us just were so aware of what a special thing that was, that she lived that long to get to bridge. You know, in her case, I think that was probably about seven generations when she was at a Shabbat.
That's right.
We had somebody that could remember, you know, her grandparents and parents and children, and now experiencing all the way down to her great-grandchildren. So, man, right. So amazing. Something we just don't know how to release anymore or how to even value. It's just really special. Well, we have three priors here, actually, not just me and my dad, but my daughter, Kelsey, speaking of three generations. So, Kels, what any thoughts that this has stirred up for you? You want to share?
All right. So I kind of had two things. One, probably my favorite part. I haven't heard this put this phrase this way before in your story, but how no matter how sweet or fruitful a moment is, like, it doesn't have to be a bad situation for you to feel called out of it. I thought that was really interesting, how you can be like making really good fruit in a really sweet time and God could still call you out of it. Like you're pastoring at a church, you're like doing good things, and God's like, all right, I want you to do good things in this other place. I don't know. I just like the way you phrased that. I thought that was really cool. And then kind of second, I just wanted to say thank you, because I feel like you made a lot of, you know, pivotal decisions that changed, that could have gone very differently. And I really like where the family's at. And most of that's due to how you and Grammy follow the Lord in really hard situations. So
thank you, Kels.
I just wanted to say thanks for doing that.
Oh. Our pleasure.
Awesome. Yeah. So as we wrap this up, you know, one of the images that I think about that we get to experience at that meal, and that I really treasure, and I think, you know, I will for as long as I live, is getting to have you bless at every Shabbat. You put hands on me and on my son Jackson, your grandson Clayton, whoever's there that's generational in our family, and bless us every single week. And then, you know, mom does the same thing with the daughters. And, you know, that's just something when we talk about, like, you know, you guys giving up a different narrative that could have been more comfortable. I often wonder, when I think about the future, when I think about 50, 100 years from now, what is going to happen to our family, because, you know, you and mom faithfully blessed your children and grandchildren repeatedly. I know that you also pray very fervently for our family.
We do. In fact, one of the things that I've done, we did early on when you and your sisters were young, is that I developed a prayer for each one of you, and take a prayer in scripture and put your name in it. And we've begun to do that with the grandkids as well. And so just a prayer that we feel is a prayer into the future, that it starts whenever we began praying it, but the fruit of those prayers will continue for decades.
Wow. Yeah, that meant a lot. And I see you have the prayer. Would you mind reading the one that you prayed for me?
No, be happy to. Sure.
I think that is such a great practice.
So it says the prayer just for Jeremy. This is from Colossians 1:9-12. Ever since we first had Jeremy, we have kept on praying and asking God to help Jeremy understand what he wants Jeremy to do, asking him to make Jeremy wise about spiritual things, and asking that the way Jeremy lives will always please the Lord and honor him, so that Jeremy will always be doing good, kind things for others, while all the time Jeremy is learning to know God better and better. We are praying, too, that Jeremy will be filled with his mighty, glorious strength so that Jeremy can keep going no matter what happens, always full of the joy of the Lord, and always thankful to the Father who has made Jeremy fit to share all the wonderful things that belong to those who live in the kingdom of light.
Amen. Awesome. Well, thank you, Dad. That's so meaningful to me. And thank you for how you have been building our family generationally, and we're excited to carry on your legacy from here.
One image I'll leave you with is this came before we moved here was that children are an arrow. Often we think about it, an arrow in a father's quiver, but it's also grandchildren in the quiver of a grandfather. And so I began to think, man, we can impact these arrows for generations if we can build into them. And they'll go further, they'll be more fruitful and more successful in God's kingdom if we invest in them. Hmm. So we're investing in 13 arrows.
That's right.
Along with the three that we already had.
Well, may they strike the heart of our enemy and bring down his kingdom to pave the way for the coming king. That's my heart as well.
And amen.
These are arrows that, yeah, we get to sharpen together. Mm-hmm. It's been a fun journey. So thanks, Dad.
Yeah, my pleasure.
All right, guys, that's all we have for today's episode. Remember, you have what it takes as a father equipped by the Holy Spirit to lead your family as a multi-generational team on mission. And as always, remember to let us know what you thought about today's episode at Family Teams on Instagram, at Family Teams on Facebook. Search for us there, easy to find, and you will find us. And let us know what you thought, whether something that stood out, something that was encouraging, or some feedback you would like to give us. All right, have a great rest of the day.